The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
World Cup Football Daily, and it's a knockout. What a day of action on Saturday. The Chileans and the Brazilians in a little thrilling one. Seleção need pens to write their name on a quarterfinal place, but could use a little sharpener ahead of the next round when they face Colombia, who in Saturday's other match say bye to the biters. Uruguayan home. With James Rodriguez looking tastier than an Italian shoulder, the Cafeteros look the team to watch. Next up, though, Sunday brings us Netherlands, Mexico and Costa Rica, Greece. Those games previewed, along with loads of other top stuff, in this World Cup Football Daily. Wow, that was really beautiful. James Horncastle.
Hello, Jimbo.
Scott Murray.
Hi, James.
Simon Burton.
Yep.
And me, James Richardson.
Ooh, AC Himbo.
Yeah, I call myself James. Or Jaimes. Depends on who you listen to, really. And welcome on board. We've had a day off and we're back. Boom. With quite a sensational day. Two great games to discuss. Different games. The first one was an absolute belter. Simon, you had the delight of missing most of it to write minute by minute.
I did. Wow, my fingers did some work then.
Mm.
But not as much as the Chileans. They really put in a shift.
Well, they did.
It was 100 amazing minutes and then a slightly quiet quarter of an hour while Chile clung on with nothing left in their energy pockets.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's what I think.
We're going to miss Chile, aren't we?
They've been a whole lot of fun, a whole load of fun. And in many ways, I wanted to see them win, really. A bit disappointed at the way that it petered out for them. But, oh, the drama.
Mm.
Even down to that last second, last moment, last minute bar hitting from a thunderous shot.
For Benia, yeah?
And you kind of thought, when that leaves the bar reverberating, you know, it's hard to pick yourself up from that with penalties so close.
Chile have now been knocked out of the last 16 by Brazil in their last three World Cup appearances. Yikes.
Indeed, Chile's record in knockout play in World Cups reads that I think they won one match at 62, and otherwise they've lost to Brazil on four occasions, and that is all of their knockout football in World Cups.
Mm. All right. Well, they look the better team for much of this game, James.
Yeah, I mean, as Simon was saying, they were really warrior-like performance. I mean, just seeing Gary Medel's kind of knee strapped up by
Medel
anything
of honor.
Everything. Really? Yeah, exactly. He did look like he was missing in action towards the end. They have so many kind of... I mean, one of the things I think has been great about Chile is the sort of promotional stuff that's come with their World Cup campaign, you know, with the miners giving their sort of rousing speech. And they've played like they didn't want to go home. They've sort of, you know, covered every sort of blade of grass possible. I think there was a stat before this game which they'd given their opponents the least time on the ball than any other. That's like 12.4 seconds or something like that. They're just always in your face. That's how kind of the goal came. That got them back into it. You know, Hulke kind of misplaced a pass from a throw-in and they were on it straight away. And you always felt that while they weren't on the ball all the time, whenever they were on it, they looked dangerous. And it was nervous. It was really nervous for Brazil, particularly in the second half when they seemed to lose shape for a bit, disorganised, and were on the ropes.
Mm. An own goal from Jara, which opened the scoring, or David Luiz was claiming it, but that put Brazil ahead. And then it was Sanchez who finished off the move that came from that kind of turnover off when the ball bounced off of Hulk. And then it went to extra time. And then, as you mentioned, Pinilla absolutely crashing one off the crossbar in the 120th minute, and then penalties, and then Hara left Scarlett, you know, in a real sense by missing the penalty. Oh, awful, Scott, awful. But terrific for the home fans. And whilst we did root for Chile, nice that Brazil are still in it.
Well, yeah, I think so. I think it would be a bit of a shame if the hosts had left so early. I'm kind of, you know, was thinking maybe Uruguay in the quarters. Obviously, that's not going to happen. But the Colombia game will be, I think, probably a bigger event than were it Chile-Colombia in the quarterfinals. I mean, I think it's a bit of a shame for Chile that they turned up, you know, the third time in a row they're playing Brazil in the knockout stage. They finally turn up without an inferiority complex. But the problem is, having reached Brazil's level, Brazil themselves aren't very good either. Hmm. So it was kind of, although it was a great game, I think they're sort of two, not poor teams, but neither of them are very good and neither of them are going to win. Oh. Well, obviously Chile won't win the World Cup.
You think
Cup
Chile
now,
not? No,
but,
okay.
But Brazil won't either. Right. So.
There was that really interesting period just after the goal was disallowed as well. Hulk had a goal disallowed in the second half. And it just, there was a 10-minute period where the crowd, the atmosphere in the stadium, and obviously I wasn't there, but the atmosphere sounded so incredible in the stadium. There was a period of about 10 minutes after that goal was disallowed that obviously they erupt when the goal goes in, and Hulk thinks it's a goal for I don't know, 30 seconds, 45 seconds. And then there followed a period of emptiness, both in the stadium and also a bit in Brazil's performance. They really dropped a level after
that. Well done for mentioning disallowed goal. I'd clean forgotten to mention that. Howard Webb, correctly, would you say, calling handball on that?
Well, whether it was Webb or Malarkey, his assistant, I think that it was a really good spot. Hmm. Well, I'm not really sure it was a booking. It looked like Hulk was attempting to legitimately control the ball, but it just landed first on his upper arm rather than on his chest. It looked like a very good spot to me. Props to the official, but I'm not sure it was deliberate. I don't think I would have given a booking there.
Hmm.
I thought that's a little harsh.
Would have been a massive, massive point of controversy had Brazil not gone through, but went through they did, and huge celebrations. Paolo Bandini tweeting from elsewhere in Brazil. Time from ball hitting post to first firework being launched after the penalties, and car alarms going off 1 second. Well, to get a view on the reaction to that game among Brazilians, and indeed the prospects going forward, and the upcoming match against Colombia, let's speak to TV Global's John Cotterill. Hi, John.
Hello, how are you?
We're very well here. How are you there in Brazil?
We're great. I say we. The Brazilians are having a fabulous time. Very, very difficult game against Chile. And, of course, Brazil almost going out in that last minute in extra time when the crossbar was whacked. And they went on to win the day on penalties. Julio Cesar, the hero in Brazil at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. What was the reaction when that final penalty was missed by Chile?
Well, as you can imagine, the fireworks went off, the horn started sounding, the cheers all over the place. Fabulous, fabulous atmosphere in Brazil, but a great sense of relief.
Right. Okay, until the next game. Of course, a lot of passion in this match. We saw a Neymar absolutely convulsed almost after the penalties finished, and just the tension finally breaking out of him. And Julio Cesar, before the penalties even started, was in tears all over the place, which for him is not that uncommon a sight. But I think the fragility of this team, it seems to be making it even more keenly felt every match.
You know, I was thinking about that during the game. I think when you see the national anthems, they look and they sound fantastic. But I think in some ways it kind of emotionally drains Brazil. And towards the end of the game, they look really knackered. And they were really, really tired, I felt. And that could have gone against them. And, you know, like you were saying, that we saw Julio Cesar right at the beginning crying a lot. And I think that Brazilians are almost as good at crying as they are at football in some respects. You do see a lot of tears in Brazil. There's no doubt about it.
John, watching Joe when he came on today, kind of at least gave us a little bit of an answer as to why Scolari keeps picking Fred in his team. It is one of the big mysteries for people outside of Brazil, exactly why he's wearing a Seleção shirt. What do people there think of Fred?
The thing is, it really highlights, when Joe came on, it really highlights the problem that Brazil had with strikers. There is a shortage of top-quality strikers in the squad. They were really scratching around to get people in. They even wanted Diego Costa, of course, who in the end chose Spain. But it's a problem in front. They don't have the bags of quality which were once associated with Brazil.
Hmm. Is Fregi, has he become a bit of an Emil Heskey figure then among the Brazilian population as a whole?
You have to go to his scoring record, and his scoring record is decent. In the Mineirao, he has an average of, I think, almost one goal per game. Not for Brazil, but for his league appearances, he's got a fabulous scoring record.
Hmm.
And that's why he's in there. His scoring record is excellent.
But
he doesn't tend to do a lot during league matches.
Mm, yeah,
and
not
in fact, Brazil, they really are a hard working side, and I think it's only Freddy who doesn't really drop back to help out the defence that much.
All right, what's the mood then among the Brazilian public at the moment? How confident are they of going all the way to the final?
Oh, Brazilians are always confident. They were talking about a possible quarterfinal game before this game had even kicked off early on today. So it's Colombia, as we know, which will be in a Fortaleza, and thankfully the kickoff time is 5 p.m. local time, so it should be a little bit cooler, I think. But Colombia will be, Chile were a step up from the group stage. Brazil didn't really play any fabulous sides in the group stage. Chile a step up from that, and Colombia a step up from Chile. So it's going to be even tougher, I think. But Brazilians are always confident.
But the commentators
whatever happens
are...
to Brazil, if Brazil lose, it's not because the opposition were that good. It's because Brazil didn't play well.
Right.
The attitude. Although there's been some praise for Chile, I've seen, but most of it is about Brazil. And especially for Julio Cesar, in the fact that he's kind of repaid his debt to Brazil, because if you go back to the 2010 World Cup in South Africa, the mistake against Netherlands when Netherlands beat Brazil in the quarterfinals was kind of blamed. Julio Cesar got the blame, and now he's repaid that debt to Brazil.
Of course, he was in tears that time as well. But so among the commentators and pundits, there's no kind of warning bells being heeded that Chile almost put Brazil out and Colombia look even stronger.
Yes, that's it. Although I've heard a few commentators saying that Brazil will beat Colombia.
All right.
I think it's going to be tough. This Chile game was tough. Everyone knew it was going to be tough. They didn't think it was going to be quite so close, because Brazil had such a good record against Chile, especially in the World Cup. It's 4 wins now in the World Cup. And Brazil at home have a terrific record. I think it's just at home in Brazil, it's just something like 2 defeats in 70 games, 7-0 games. So whoever plays Brazil, it's going to be very, very hard.
Very true, very true. Okay, one last question, John. As an Englishman doing commentary in Brazil for TV Globo, what's your goal celebration like?
I'm a kind of... we don't do the goal stuff. We do the kind of, the normal stuff you should get in England, I think. But you were asked when... I do remember when I started doing it a long time ago, more than 12 years now, and a group came in from Hong Kong, a film crew, and they tried to get us to do the goal thing just for Hong Kong TV, which was quite embarrassing, I think. But we did the kind of BBC, the traditional kind of the British style of thing.
Oh, my word.
Which I think, the thing about the goal thing, talking from a commentator's perspective, it sounds great sometimes, but if you get an own goal or a dodgy penalty, they still have to do that. And also, they don't have, whatever it is, whatever happens, they are forced, the commentators, they're forced to say goal, which is very, very limiting. You don't get these fabulous phrases which we associate with the great goals which people remember 40 or 50 years ago. You don't get those phrases here. It's just goal. And while it sounds great to a foreign audience who don't really know what the commentators are saying, I think it's quite a limiting device. So I'm quite pleased in the way that I don't have to do the goal thing, even though sometimes it sounds terrific.
Well, that's a really interesting point, John. Well, many thanks for that. Keep enjoying the tournament. We'll catch up with you again soon.
We always hope so. It's a pleasure.
World Cup Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
People love hearing all the South American commentary. For example, this, when Colombian TV witnessed the first of James Rodriguez's strikes today. Or indeed this, when he did his second. And it goes on in a similar vein for quite some time, I can tell you. And you think, well, that's terrific. That'd be wonderful to hear that kind of thing. But you'd lose all the great quotable lines, wouldn't you?
I think it needs to be a special goal to provoke a truly extended goal. But perhaps they should have time the length of the word goal according to where that goal ranks on the kind of Richter scale of goal amazingness.
That's a fair point.
That first James Rodriguez, take it as long as you can go.
I think he did, yeah.
Yeah, I think he probably did. Yeah. But a dodgy penalty, maybe just keep it brief.
Right. What's your favourite goal celebration, Scott?
I always like the old David Coleman 1-0, which was, I guess, a bit more British.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, he was saying the same thing every time, much in the same way that this elongated goal stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, each to their own.
Yeah. I admire the simplicity of that as well. I'm not sure the commentators should be making themselves quite the star of the show in the way that they do these days.
Well, I'd go for that.
Mm. All right. Anyway, now, I mentioned Colombia, and you're not sure if you saw the game, listeners, but it wasn't as thrilling a match as the Brazil-Chile game, but a couple of extraordinary goals, both scored by an extraordinary player, James Rodriguez. Remember when Falcao got injured and everyone was like, well, Colombia, eh? So that's them sorted. And they've just been amazing.
Yeah, I think they've probably been the best team at the tournament thus far because while they've dazzled going forward, and it's not just James Rodriguez, I think Cuadrado as well has had a really good tournament. He's got four assists.
Four assists? That's almost as many as he got in the whole season in Serie A.
Is it?
No, yeah, he only got five assists in 32 games in Serie A. It says here in my...
Well, he created the second most chances, apparently. To take the spotlight a little bit away from those two, I think they've been quite solid at the back throughout, with Yepes, who's this sort of, you know, old warrior, and then Ospina, who was, worked tonight. He made a number of good saves, has been one of those sort of decent goalkeepers, a bit like Ochoa on the sort of under the radar for a while now. They look solid. You know, they look like they can do it in both phases of play. You know,
Scott, are they the real deal?
Yeah, I think so. I think at the back as well, Zuniga was fantastic. Mm-hmm. Like going forward, as you say, the keeper was magnificent. They definitely look the real deal. I mean, the thing is, I think like Uruguay, you can maybe pick fault with one or two things they've done at this World Cup, but they didn't really do anything wrong tonight. They just got they got picked apart for the second goal, which is a stunning team goal. Arguably in its own way, as good as the opening goal.
Well, talk us through the two goals then.
There's not much to say about the first one.
Can it be described in words?
It was just a massive bluter, chest down and bluter.
Well, it's off, the spin
just,
as well,
just off the crossbar as well. Which someone emailed in to say that when I was doing the minute by minute, that they're sometimes the most aesthetically pleasing goal when it just pings in at speed and comes down.
I don't get that fetish myself, but a lot of people feel that way.
This had was also Muslera actually did get his fingers to it, and the strike was so good. It still beat him. It still hit on the side of the bar.
So the ball comes in, it's arcing up through the nighttime sky, and he's got time to look at it, look over his shoulder, check the goal, look back, and then he's facing away from goal, spin and absolutely thwack this into the net, or just off the crossbar.
Well, yeah, he sort of chests it down into space as well. It was just one of those beautiful moves that just occasionally you know the thing's going in from the very split second that it goes on its sort of inevitable route into the goal. Yeah. I thought the same of Sanchez's goal against Brazil. It was just one of those things where the keeper could have got it, but just somehow you knew that's threaded in, that's finding its way in.
Mm, lovely stuff.
Lovely,
Colombia then going off on their traditional dance, which, confusingly, Cuadrado was in the Gazette today describing how this was their tribute to Michael Jackson and Thriller, but they obviously haven't... they're watching some dodgy pirate. That's not the Thriller dance at all.
Yeah, apparently not. I'd like to see Cuadrado play with the glove with the...
sequin glove.
Sequin glove, yeah. Right. I think that would really add to his
I don't think FIFA
play.
Would be on board for that at all.
It's a shame.
But I'm just saying, if you're going to talk about how you're doing your dance as a tribute to Michael Jackson, do the research. Do the... You know, they want to...
Fulham had an Argentinian striker a while ago who donned a wolf mask in it when he scored a goal.
Yeah, Facundo, what's his name?
Saza.
Something like that.
Right, you really, if Colombia wants to do it properly, they all need to have the full-on face mask in their jockstrap. And then
carry extra limbs, which then could drop out of their jersey.
They'd all go to play for Fulham as well. Well, Mohamed Al-Fayed's Fulham, right, wouldn't they, with that statue outside. But, I mean, yeah.
Are they, this is the first I've heard of this thriller business.
Oh, yeah.
Are they pretending to be several Michael Jacksons?
Well,
or
to be fair,
they pretend to be like,
from
zombies?
My knowledge of the video, there's no piece of choreography that is in any way related to what they're doing. Is something, you know, it's a kind of South American, sort of salsa-esque thing. I'd tell you another interesting thing which I saw in the Gazette, which I don't think the rest of the world media has picked up, is that supposedly Jose Peckerman, their esteemed manager, is a relative of Gregory Peck.
He's also a former cab driver.
Is he?
Yeah. And he ended his playing career at 28. Playing in Colombia, I think, and he went back to Buenos Aires, became a cab driver.
Right.
There you go.
Super. Oh, tell you who wasn't in this game, Luis Suarez.
No.
Really? No. There's been a lot of talk about Luis, who lost his balance and hit his teeth against Chiellini, as he now explains. What a confusion this has been. What a misunderstanding.
That's kind of like the excuse that you have, you know, when people go to hospitals and they need something removing from their from a particular...
Yeah.
What is the word?
Orifice?
Well, orifice, yeah. And, yeah. I just fell on this.
Right. So he fell and hit his teeth against Chiellini, and also to...
I thought he didn't hit his teeth. I thought he hit the side of his face against Chiellini.
Oh, really?
But then his teeth started hurting.
Right. Well, they would do. All sorts of people saying silly things, particularly in Uruguay. Silly to my mind, at least. Tabárez saying he's been disqualified because of the English press. And various other people say, like Maradona saying it's like a trip to Guantanamo and all that kind of thing. You've got the front page there. Is that Sunday's Daily Star?
Daily Star, yeah.
Yeah. What's that say?
It says Suarez has bitten 8 players.
Really?
Shock claims of more Luis attacks.
Right.
The precise details of which I can't read because I've only got a small picture of it and they're too pixelated.
Right.
But, yeah, 8 players claims the Star. So, yeah.
It's already spiraling. It's building, isn't it?
Well, if FIFA banned him for 4 months on the basis that it was a third offence, maybe they need to go back and extend their...
Yeah, possibly so. Possibly so. Well, it's a fascinating story, and we'll continue to watch how it develops. Meantime, this.
So this is the bit of the podcast you can skip or hum loudly over my voice until I stop talking. We've got a brand new Guardian Football channel on YouTube, which is home to all kinds of original video content, including a daily news show out every lunchtime, filling you in on all the best and funniest press and social media reaction to the night before, as well as previews of all the big games with a range of special guests. Check out youtube.com/Guardian Football.
Now, a little bit of news that's going on beyond the world of the World Cup. Swansea, they've brought in Bafétimbi Gomis, who has had a contract with Lyon. Is that good news?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good news. Well, I mean, they'll have a hard-hitting strike force of Boney and Gomis, if Boney stays, because it looks like Michu
going to
Napoli, apparently.
Going to Napoli, right. There are mixed reports. Some people say he's having a medical... everyone's leaving Southampton, but here's... look, Graziano Pelle is on his way there from Feyenoord, apparently for 10 million euros. Hugh Stevens, touchingly, writes in to ask if he's any good. You a Graziano Pelle fan, James?
Well, he is the white Pelle, unlike Wayne Rooney was. He scored lots of goals in the Eredivisie. You know, he scored 23 this season, scored...
23 goals?
Yeah, I mean, there were some people clamouring for him to be in the Italy squad, but... Yeah, because he plays abroad and in that particular league, they said, well, they weighted those goals differently. Because
they had loads of goal-scoring threats up front, didn't they, Italy?
Exactly, right. Yeah. But whenever he's played in Italy in Serie A for Parma and Lecce, he hasn't really scored a lot of goals. But he knows the new coach, Koeman, so I think that's why he's been brought in.
Right. Okay, speaking of people leaving Southampton... What do you reckon, Scott, on Adam Lallana going to Liverpool?
It's okay. I mean, I think it's going to be one of those transfers that's defined by the amount of money that the club's spent on him. $25 million seems quite a lot, but I mean, he's a decent player.
How will he fit in? What would the lineup be with him in it?
Well, I'm guessing he'll swap around with Coutinho quite a lot.
Right,
is just another option.
Okay,
I'm guessing, but. but I don't know.
Right.
I'm winging it, James.
Okay. No, well, he might be as well, depending on his position on the field. Nick Miller, quoting the fantastic remark by Maurizio Zamperini about Norwich's brand new signing. They've got a great track record on the transfer market, Norwich. Carl Lafferty, of course, the player in question. Zamperini had this to say: why was Lafferty sold? It was requested by my coach, who asked me to send him away. He is a womanizer. He disappears for a week, takes a plane to go hunt for women in Milan. His behaviour is unmanageable. I asked Iacchini, the manager, to straighten him out, but he told me he can't. Kyle's an Irishman without rules. How about that, Norwich?
So when he leaves Norwich, where's he going to go hunting?
I don't know. That's a very good show.
On the hunt.
Ipswich, says producer Ben. what's funny about that?
Hey,
Ipswich based listeners. Right, now, on Sunday, two more games. It's a big day, actually, and not just in football. You've got your school fete.
I've got a school fete. That's right. It is a big day all round.
All right.
Two World Cup matches and a school fete.
What kind of events will there be at the school fete, Sam?
I believe there will be a cake stand.
Right.
Bring a cake and buy some cake type thing.
Right. Will there be a man in a bear suit, Sam?
I'm hoping that there will be no bear suit. I'm certainly not taking mine.
Oh, okay.
Right. There's a man in the bear suit at the Russia game. Because he was, dressing up as the Russian bear. Right.
Capello's in trouble in Russia, isn't he?
Yeah, apparently so.
Yeah. We're not happy with him. Not happy at all. Anyway, sorry, I was mentioning the football that's going on.
Yeah.
And in and around the various fates and that kind of thing, there's the Netherlands taking on Mexico. And that is in Fortaleza, isn't it? And they're quite concerned about the heat they're going to be facing there, because I think I'm right in saying the Netherlands haven't played anywhere hot yet. And the feeling is that half of the World Cup teams have kind of gotten away with it so far by playing in reasonably temperate zones like São Paulo and down south Curitiba, that kind of thing. But they're about to hit the heat, and they reckon that, well, Van Gaal's talking up Mexico being better adjusted to this kind of climate and that. Well, what do you think, Netherlands-Mexico, Sam?
Well, one thing, Van Gaal produced my logic of the day. His quote again about the Mexico match. He said he expects a match just like Chile, because there isn't much difference between the way Chile play and the way Mexico play. And he said, I think Chile had two outstanding players. Mexico has fewer, and that's what makes them a better team.
Right, okay.
So the fewer good players you have, in other words, the better you are as a team.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, it sometimes does work that way.
Well,
huh?
It can do. Certainly didn't. In any team I played.
I wonder who he reckons their outstanding players are. Probably Ochoa. Guillermo Ochoa would be one, the goalkeeper.
I suppose so. He's caught the eye, hasn't he?
He certainly has. He certainly has. He caught everything Brazil threw at him, that's for sure, in that 0-0 draw. And it's a fascinating clash of managers. You've Van Gaal on one side and the shy and retiring Miguel Herrera. El Piojo. I'm not sure what El Piojo is.
It's the louse.
I thought it was some kind of insectoid.
It's not the most
it's not
appealing name, is it?
It's not, is
it's
it?
It's like Messi is the flea, but these small, that you'd use a
he's
particular
not
shampoo
small,
to get rid of.
He does he writhed around on the ground.
A louse.
Like a louse, I suppose, yeah. But he looks a lot of fun, and what a terrific World Cup they've had so far, Mexico. Any chance, Scott? Any chance, James, of them overturning the Netherlands?
Well, they've never gone further than this stage. They've reached this stage in every World Cup since 1994. This is their glass ceiling.
Right.
I've been quietly impressed by them. A lot was made of how their run through qualifying was shambolic. They went through so many managers, and yet Herrera's really pulled them together. They play quite an interesting way. They've got a good sort of balance, I think, between youth and experience. There's still Rafa Marquez at the back, able to sort of playmate from there. And they do have some goals in them. They're not lots of goals. I mean, it was good to see Chicharito Hernandez get on the score sheet against, was it Croatia? I thought they played really well in that game. They restricted Croatia to very few chances and scored three themselves. So I think they will be difficult, and it'll be interesting to see whether this Netherlands side is not like it was in Euro 2008 when they were so great in the group and blitzed Italy, blitzed France, and then came up against Russia. Well, everyone was tipping them as favourites, came up against Russia and came unstuck. So,
Because it's been interesting so far. In the group, they started off with that monstrous game against Spain. They also beat Chile, who looked great today against Brazil. But the Australia game showed that a well-organised team could catch them off guard. I don't know if maybe they were a little bit relaxed for that match and they won't be for this one. But, you know, on the basis of certainly of that Australia game, you'd say that there is a significant chance there for Mexico. But then if you look at the number of goals that Holland has scored.
Yeah, I mean, and in the group stages, they scored more goals than any other team. Before the tournament, many people looked at their defence, thought it was young, inexperienced. I think 4 or 5 players in it were part of that. Was it the final side that lost 10-0 to PSV a couple of years ago? They've obviously matured since then, but they don't think of this as being a particularly good Dutch side in terms of individuals. Mm. They do think they're a good team. They've certainly shown that. They're not playing in the sort of Dutch traditions of good football. They're playing sort of direct style and getting results. They're putting results ahead of everything.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned low expectations. We were talking to Michael Jongsma before the tournament, and he was quite happily saying that they might not make it out of the group. But
some of them were saying we won't get out of the group. We'll support Belgium.
Wow.
So.
Well, that's one side of that. Whoever gets out of that will be fancying their chances of making it to the semi-final, I reckon, because whoever gets out of that game will be facing the winner of Costa Rica and Greece. Now, we've talked a lot about Costa Rica and what a surprise they've been, but Greece, arguably, are equally jaw-dropping their presence in the last 16. Stavros Drakularakos is a sports writer for Sport 24 in Greece, and our producer Ben spoke to him earlier and began by asking what the reaction has been back home after the Greeks snuck into the knockout stages.
Everyone was pretty shocked, especially after the almost disastrous loss that Greece suffered from Colombia in the first game. But after that performance against the Ivory Coast, everybody is very, very excited and enthusiastic. It's the first time that Greece has qualified to the top 16. So luckily, the players won't be stressed and they won't be nervous about the game against Costa Rica.
Perhaps Costa Rica is arguably the weakest side in the competition as well, apart from Greece.
Well, that remains to be seen, because I'm pretty sure that Uruguay and Italy felt the same, and in a sense, England felt the same as well. But Costa Rica has been quite good in their performance so far. Obviously, it's not like the host nation or Holland. And the other thing about Costa Rica is that their star player, Joel Campbell, who's on loan to Arsenal from Olympiacos, has played in Greece for the past year. So more or less, the fans and the players know what to expect. Three of his teammates are going to be facing him. And that's something that Greece plans to build on.
And what's the latest team news there?
The question in everyone's mind was whether Katsouranis would be back into the starting 11 after having served a one-match ban due to a red card against Japan. And there was even a Facebook group, that's a funny story, there was a Facebook group seconds after Greece qualified to the top 16, saying we don't want Katsouranis in the starting 11 against Costa Rica. And that got about 100,000 fans in 2 days. It seems that Katsouranis won't be starting, and that the three men in the midfield are going to be Maniatis, Samaris, and Karagounis, and the rest of the team is going to be the same, with the goalkeeper Karnesis coming back from a slight injury, and he's fit to play.
Are you feeling brave enough to make a prediction?
I'd say 1-0 to Greece in overtime. Obviously, as we said, Costa Rica is not a team that has loads of experience at this level. Greece has been quite consistent, not in their attacking play and their, let's say, beautiful game, but they have been quite consistent in make or break games. So, yeah, I'm optimistic.
And if they do get beyond this game, how far can they go?
There's a good thing that says you don't have to limit yourself. Just look at the game that you're facing and don't worry about the game that's coming up next. Although in typical football arrogance, Greeks already, as soon as they heard that Greece is facing Costa Rica, they said, OK, so who's going to be next right after them?
World Cup Football Daily with James Richardson.
Well, it's going to be an interesting clash there in Recife, where huge storms caused the last match when USA played Germany. But the stadium looks... I have to say, I was very impressed with the drainage there, because the roads outside were flooded, but slightly greasy top, but it was otherwise all fine, wasn't it? So,
the pitch was all fine. It was, yeah. Mm. Yeah,
but more storms.
So this is the worst attack of the group stage against the best defence, joint best defence.
Is it?
So a low-scoring match basically beckons.
Although, it was interesting how in the final group game against Ivory Coast, the Greeks kind of tentatively emerged from their shell and started poking the ball towards the opposition goal a bit. It seemed like they almost acquired a taste for it.
Yeah, there was just a vague semblance of hope. I mean, I think that this is an under-the-radar exciting match. Ooh. I'm looking forward to this one. Things might happen, and whatever does happen will be good. I mean, no one expected anything of either of these teams.
No, it's the first time the Greeks have ever been at this point, actually.
Yeah.
The thing is, the last two Greek performances have been good, because although the Japan game wasn't all that, they kind of towards the end of that game, especially when I think it's a Gekas came on, Samaras was still flitting around. I mean, they started piling forward a bit. They could have nicked that game, played pretty well given that they were down to 10 men for most of it, and then fantastic against the Ivory Coast.
Right.
So
the Japan game, you memorably described as being like the shape of jazz to come by Ornette Coleman or similar. No,
yeah, I was very tired.
All right, no, I love the parallel. I'm not sure if that then continued on into the Ivory Coast performance, or whether that was
it was probably just a bit more of a basic jazz album.
Okay,
maybe Kind of Blue.
Right,
popular one.
Mm.
Well, or maybe a bit of Antonio Carlos Jobim, seen we're in Brazil.
All right, okay, a little bit of bossa nova type thing. Yeah. Okay, good. They might be Kind of Blue themselves after facing a Costa Rica team that's already seen off two world champions and then, you know, drew 0-0 with the other. So, fair enough. Would you like to call this one, Simon?
Well, I can kind of see Greece getting a 1-0 win here.
Really?
I can. I'm kind of going against the grain deliberately in saying that, but I kind of... I'm interested in seeing what Greece come up with in this match. Obviously, Costa Rica won't be. I think I might be.
Okay,
you know, I have high hopes for this game.
Right.
I think this one is going to be interesting. I think it's one to watch.
Right, Costa Rica were perhaps the story of the group stages. Do you think that's all going to fizzle out now they've got to get to the last 16?
I don't. I think maybe that opinion is coloured by the 0-0 draw with England. Because they were so impressive against Uruguay, and some people have picked that apart and said, well, Suarez wasn't playing in that one. But against Italy, they were outstanding.
Yeah,
were really brave and courageous about how they went about their game in that. You know, they defended really high up the pitch. They weren't afraid for teams to play over the ball, over the top, and to run in behind. They were just, they just went for it.
Mm.
Been really impressed by it.
Yeah, well, it was an incredibly high intensity performance against Italy that led to FIFA then, or was followed by FIFA dope testing 7 of their players. But whether that's going to come back and haunt them a bit, because they must have expended so much energy, and certainly the game against England, it didn't need to be so intense, but it didn't show anything like the same kind of fire.
Perhaps when you say that they might have expended too much energy, that England game, which was a bit of a kind of dead match. May have helped them recover from that.
That's also true.
No one put too much into that match.
Fair enough. Well, that's Costa Rica. They're taking on Greece. The winner gets to play either Netherlands or Mexico, and that's what's coming up on Sunday. We'll be back Sunday night with our thoughts on all of that. So do join us early Monday morning. Have a super Sunday in the meantime. Many thanks to James, to Simon and Scott, and producer Ben. We'll be back tomorrow. Bye for now.
World Cup Football Daily, just like being in Brazil.